morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. I'm really excited to share our findings. I think this is a really great panel. Let's see. So the title of my presentation is, Does Policy Create Healthier Beverage Environments in Small Semi-Rural Communities? And this is work that was focused in California. Just to give you just a little bit of background about who we are, we were founded in 94 by Dr. Sarah Samuels. We're based in Oakland. For those of you who are familiar with the Bay Area, we're right across the bridge from San Francisco. We also have a satellite office in LA. We have a lot of projects in LA as well. And basically, we're a national consulting firm, and much of our work is around evaluating programs and initiatives that are focused on PSC changes around nutrition, physical activity, and tobacco control, and other health topics. So the program that we helped to evaluate was called California for Health. This was a CDC community transformation grant. I think a lot of you are familiar with the CTG grants. And this was a grant that was awarded to Public Health Institute in Oakland. It focused on 42 California counties. There you can see in blue and yellow, of course, California colors. And the work was really concentrated in 12 of those counties, which are in blue. These 12 counties had extra funding to actually implement intense interventions. The counties are there, ranging from very rural communities in California, up in Humboldt and Calaveras County, to some that are not so remote. Solano County is very close to us, Monterey County on the coast. And the basic aim of California for Health was to reduce chronic disease burden. So the evaluation for California for Health was led by Nutrition Policy Institute at UC Berkeley. There were subcontractors to do the evaluation, CCHE, Alan Cheadle's group, and UCSF. They concentrated on the evaluation of the community clinical linkages evaluation, and that we were a part of the sugary beverage evaluation. And again, with the CTG grants, they were focused on four strategic directions, and we were really focused here on it. I'm just going to be presenting the results from the sugary beverage findings. So the evaluation objective was to determine whether healthy beverage standards or policies implemented in particular settings, if they would change the healthfulness of the beverages that are offered in those particular settings. And we looked at change in two ways. We looked at the level of adherence before and after policy was passed to the beverage standards. And we also looked at sugar content. So we looked at sugar content, teaspoons per 8 ounce of a beverage. So the sugary beverage intervention, the intervention was to obviously reduce access to sugary beverages and increase access to water. And so the counties had basically a menu of different types of policies that they could enact or implement in their counties, ranging from, you know, just having water accessible at staff meetings to implementing the wellness policies that were existent in their counties, vending policies, and so forth. And they focused on four different types of settings: adult settings like work sites, school settings, non-youth serving settings. These are out of school time, so after school settings, or places where youth are likely to be out of school time. And then settings where there are children 0 to 5, such as childcare settings. Public Health Institute put together, through a long process with a lot of different nutrition experts in California, looking at model policies that already existed, and put together their own healthy beverage standards in these particular settings. And they're all very unique. They're particular to these different settings. And the counties were asked to implement these beverage standards. They could implement them fully 100%, or they could modify the standards and implement, depending on, you know, where they were, how much support they had within their counties. It was really left up to them to decide what was right for their intervention. So in terms of the data collection timeline, it was this would have been a four-year grant, but obviously, as you all know, it was cut short 2 years. So it started in 2012. What we did was we trained the counties to collect the beverage data in their respective counties, and we trained them to use food beams, which I'll talk to you, I'll describe in a little bit. So the counties were trained using food beams. They went into the sites where they were building relationships and, you know, had planned to pass certain policies. Then they implemented the policies. They went back to collect the data, and then we were they sent the data to us, and then we analyzed the data. So food beams, just a little bit about food beams. It's a web-based assessment tool. They had iPads. We provided iPads for each of the counties. It's a website that they go into and they enter in the beverage data. This was a tool that we had developed through an NIH SBIR grant. And in our database, we have about 5,500 foods and beverages, and we had a reliability study that was conducted as well. This is a tool that we use a lot in a lot of our sugary beverage and assessments. So in terms of the number of county sites and venues, as I mentioned, we had 12 counties that were implementing this work. The data and the results that I'm going to show you are only concentrated in 9 of those 12 counties. We didn't include the other 3 counties because they did other work to implement certain policies that really didn't fit with our with the way we analyze the data. In our paper, we describe a little bit more about, you know, how they did it. For example, they worked with their local Head Start chapter or group in their county, and they helped to get 100% juice off of the menu. So they actually took out just the allowable portion of 100% juice out of it. And it didn't really, we couldn't really fit that into the way we analyzed. So not that they didn't do the work, but it was just a different in the way they collected data. What I'm going to present on is, we included 3 sites, obviously, because, well, not obviously, but 3 sites, the adult work sites, the schools, and the non-school sites. They didn't, There wasn't much work done in the children 0 to 5 group, so that data is not going to be shown here today. In the end, we had 47 match sites observed at both time points. So, for example, if they were working with school A, they went back over time and went back to school A to collect the data. The counties, they collected a lot of data in different sites at baseline, not knowing exactly where they would actually implement. They had some good ideas, but at time 2, they went back to those places where they actually implemented the policy. So we ended up with 47 match sites. And then venues are those places where beverages are sold or offered. So venues are things like vending machines, the meeting school stores, and snack carts or snack bars. So in terms of venues, we observed we analyzed 88 at baseline, 72 at follow-up. And the majority of the venues, not surprisingly, I think, were vending machines, and we observed 82% at baseline and 85% at follow-up. So the way we analyze the data, and I don't know how many of you have analyzed beverage data, but it can be really, it was very complicated, and we ended up analyzing it in 2 separate, different ways. We had beverage as the unit of analysis, so we had all the beverages that were observed at baseline were compared to all the beverages that were compared at observed at follow-up. And then we also used the setting or the site as the unit of analysis. Because we couldn't pair beverage to beverage, doing it by site allowed us to then test for statistical significance and looked at adherence to the policies and to sugar content, which actually we did for both. Okay, so what do we find? So here, these are, so in terms of the number of beverages observed, so overall, across all sites, we observed 1,300 beverages at baseline, and then at follow-up, 1,178. And so these you can see here by adult sites, school sites, and non-school youth sites, the number of beverages that we observed at baseline and then follow-up. And then, you know, as you can see here, the majority of the beverages here, a large proportion, were observed in the adult sites. So in terms of looking at beverage as a unit of analysis, in terms of adherence to the beverage standards, you can see overall here there was a percentage point increase of 7%, and really across all sites we saw an increase in adherence. So that means the beverages that were that basically adhered to those particular standards in these particular sites. And so what was driving that change? In the adult sites, we saw that there was a big reduction in sodas that were offered or sold. There was an increase in water. In school sites, there was a sharp decline in sports drinks and an increase in water. And in California, we have California beverage standards that was passed a while ago. I think it was back in 2005 or so. I shouldn't say dates because I'm probably wrong. But so in California, the compromise was that sports drinks was actually allowed in schools. And so, and this had been a thorn in our side for so long. And so the sites worked to get the sports drinks out. So that's where the sharp decline is. And then bottled water, we saw an increase there. And in the non-school youth sites, there was an increase in bottled water and a decrease in diet sodas and juice drinks. Diet sodas, even though they're not a sugary beverage, didn't adhere in terms of the PHI standards. So we also looked at average sugar content. And so overall here, we saw a 0.4 teaspoon decrease in sugar per 8 ounce across all these different sites, and actually saw an increase in schools. So actually there should be a teaspoon after that. So we saw a 0.2 increase in teaspoons of sugar. And so, why did we see that? So, across all sites, the reduction was due to a decrease in sugar sodas and an increase in water. And then, in the non-school youth sites, we saw a big difference. Right, this is a 1.5 teaspoons decrease. And what we think is that what we found was that at baseline, the sugar content was substantially higher than the other two settings, and so I think there was a lot of room for improvement there with the non-school youth sites. And then the increase in the school sites, this was really driven by an increase in 100% juice, which obviously is something that we're wanting to replace with soda, but also has a substantial amount of sugar as well. So now kind of turning to site as the unit of analysis. And here, across the board, we saw a statistical significance increase in adherence to the standards in all settings and all in these different sites, except for schools. And then sugar content. Similar pattern, we saw that average sugar content decreased in all sites except the schools here too. So just to summarize these findings, analyzed by beverage, adherence to the standards increased overall and in each setting. Average sugar decreased in all settings except for schools, again, because of the increase in 100% juice. And then by site, average percent adherence increased in across all sites. And again, average sugar decreased except in school sites. So some of the strengths and limitations. I think one of the greatest strengths of this work was that we had trained the the focus was on training the staff, the county, the public health staff to go in and collect this data on their own. It's just a really nice way to really engage them in this process and help them to understand the importance of evaluation and to be able to do this and to build their capacity to do this, you know, after we've completed our work with them. So it was a really, I think that was one of the strengths. The use of food beans as a tool that we've used in other studies, I think it helps to streamline data collection. And then our focus on small communities in California, which oftentimes a lot of the big cities get all the funding, and so it was a nice way to look at the small semi-rural communities. Some of the limitations, you know, kind of goes with the training, with the strength of training the county staff is that they're not researchers, and so there could be some compromise on data quality. There was a lot of hand-holding that we had to do, lots of TA, even just with the iPad. A lot of them were not even used to that technology of using a tablet, and this was not too long ago, but we had a great variation in the number of beverages observed in each county, and you know, this is really something somewhat unavoidable. This is something that happens in community-based research. One county observed two-thirds of all the beverages in the adult sites. And even though we had pre-post, before and after policy was implemented, it would have been nice if we had a comparison group. So given the limitations, you know, our findings indicate that healthy beverage standards can have a positive impact on the beverages that are offered and sold in these particular sites. I just want to thank the amazing study team on this. They're superstars in my regard, and so these are all the different people, plus more, and really thank the county staff also in helping us do this work. So thank you. I'll take a few questions, a couple questions, I think. Yeah, this is, I remember at the Healthy Eating Research Conference, I remember Bill Dietz kind of brought this up as an issue, and how do we talk about, you know, sugar-sweetened beverages, exactly how you described it. I think for our work, we particularly used sugary beverages because we were working really closely with the community, the different communities, and that seemed to be a little bit more palatable in terms of the terminology. I remember Bill Dietz talking about, I think he introduced the term sugared beverage. And I'm not sure if that really took off, but I think you're right. I think there's a variety of different ways that we call sugared beverages, sugary beverages. I don't know if anybody else had a...
I mean, I think it's a translation issue, right, with the general public. The general public knows what soda is, but sugar-sweetened beverage isn't really part of our dialect so much. So I think in scientific settings, we generally know what sugar-sweetened beverage means, but when we're trying to translate the science, we default to words like sugary beverage or soda because we feel like it's more translatable. I don't know if it is or not, but...
There has been message testing around this. I'm forgetting which group it is, but...
Probably American Heart has some, I'm guessing.
I know that you didn't do 0 to 5, but if you were, what kind of location would you target?
So again, you know, the counties did go to, they worked with their Head Start. It could, you know, there's the CACFP has beverage standards, right? And so that could have been the challenge in identifying, you know, for the counties. They were really the ones who decided where they would work. I'm not sure that we did a really good job of asking them and having a good kind of debrief on what their thinking was in terms of the sites that they went to. I mean, it would have to be like they worked with their Head Start centers who already had a beverage standard, but they went a little bit, they went beyond, right? They made them even stricter by having them take out just the 100% juice that was offered. I'm not sure. Thanks. One more, and then we'll hold everything to the end. Not in this study. We didn't do price data. We didn't collect price. In another study that we did, I believe we did. We didn't analyze it yet, but what study is that one? I'm totally blanking on that one study. But we did collect through, because with Food Beams, we were able to collect price data as well. But that's a great question. I think that's the other piece about, you know, if we're going to implement standards, how does it affect the sales, right, and the cost? Yeah. All right. Thank you.